The Colorado River's impact. The Colorado River and its branches nourish 6 million acres of farmland, fuel 2 hydroelectric plants, and support a whopping $26 billion in yearly recreational activities. It's a lifeline for 36 million people living in cities like Boulder, Denver, and Colorado Springs in Colorado, Salt Lake City in Utah, Albuquerque in New Mexico, Las Vegas in Nevada, and Phoenix, Tucson, San Diego, and Los Angeles in California. Back in the mid-1800s, hopeful ranchers and farmers moved westward with the belief that farming would bring rain. They also thought that the introduction of trains and telegraph lines could spur rainstorms, but reality hit hard. The arid West couldn't fulfill these expectations. Still, deserts, if they had water, would be prime for farming. They boast stable weather, free from frost, hail, and storms, allowing for steady farming jobs and precise planting and harvest times. Before humans intervened with dams in the 1930s, the Colorado River meandered across Southern California and southwestern Arizona, leaving behind fertile soil for farming, reclamation. In 1901, President Theodore Roosevelt championed water reclamation in his first State of the Union address. The Laguna Diversion Dam, built in 1909, marked the beginning of altering the Colorado River's flow. This led to a series of reservoirs, canals, and aqueducts being constructed. The monumental Hoover Dam was completed in 1936, despite the grueling conditions faced by the workers. Then, in 1956, the Colorado River Water Storage Project was approved, giving rise to Lake Powell and Lake Mead. These projects transformed the desert, sparking disputes over water rights and environmental concerns. In 1922, amidst fierce debate, the Colorado River Compact was established, dividing the water between two regions, the Upper Basin and the Lower Basin. The Upper Basin, consisting of Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, and New Mexico, would receive half of the water, while the Lower Basin, comprising Nevada, Arizona, and California, would receive the other half. Hydrologists estimated the river's average flow to be 17 million acre-feet per year. To put this in perspective, an acre-foot of water covers an acre of land with a foot of water and can sustain 1 to 3 typical families for a year. However, projections were based on rainfall levels from the early 20th century, which were unusually high. Analysis of tree rings suggests that this period was the wettest in centuries, leading to an optimistic overestimate of the river's flow. As a result, there's now a looming deficit of about 3 million acre-feet projected by 2060, according to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation. Water laws, East versus West. In England and on the U.S. East Coast, water use is governed by riparian law, granting equal rights to water for neighbors living next to a water source. However, in the western U.S., prior appropriation dictates water rights, tracing back to the Gold Rush era. This system operates on a first-come, first-served basis, where the first users retain rights to their water allocation indefinitely, regardless of circumstances like drought. Essentially, those who were first to use water hold seniority and cannot be deprived of their rights, the law of the river. In the Wild West of water rights, there's a group of seasoned experts known as the Water Buffaloes who hold the keys to understanding the law of the river. These folks are deeply entrenched in the culture of water rights in the western United States. For instance, they tell you straight up that it's not cool for Los Angeles to drain Phoenix dry just because they had dibs on the water first. That's a clear violation of the law of the river. Water law out here is a hot mess. It's like a tangled ball of yarn that nobody can seem to unravel. You've got ranchers, farmers, miners, and a whole bunch of other players all fighting for their piece of the pie. And when one of them decides to use up all their water, like what happened recently with the Crystal River drying up because of some big-time irrigator, it's bad news for everyone downstream. This idea called in-stream flow water rights popped up in the 70s. Basically, it says that the river itself should get a say in who gets the water to protect the environment. The Colorado Water Conservation Board is trying to get ahead of the game by snagging up those early water rights from willing sellers. But then you've got these groups called recreational and channel diversions, REACDs, who want a piece of the action for things like kayaking and jet skiing. The problem is, they're at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to water rights because they weren't even on the radar back when the big shots were divvying up the water. 100 years ago, nobody was thinking about stuff like fracking, pollution, or disappearing wetlands. And even today, economists don't always give them the attention they deserve. But if we're gonna sort out this mess, we've gotta start paying attention to the bigger picture. The urban paradox. Living in cities might seem less harmful to the environment compared to countryside living. Surprisingly, those who cherish nature often inadvertently harm it by encroaching on wild spaces. Even though city people try to be eco-friendly by driving electric cars and buying organic food, these actions can backfire. For instance, mining lithium for batteries damages the environment, and growing organic vegetables requires more land and water. Cities efficiently use resources and allow wild areas to remain sparsely inhabited. However, water conservation efforts in cities are counteracted by urban sprawl consuming saved water. Agriculture, mainly in places like the Colorado River Basin, uses a whopping 80% of available water, the troubles of the Salton Sea. Back in 1905, a company in California tried to fix a blocked waterway near the border with Mexico. Instead, they accidentally made the Salton Sea. At first, it was a cool place for tourists, but now it's causing big problems for the environment. Farmers used to dump extra water from their fields into the sea. This water carried a lot of salt and nasty stuff from pesticides. The sea can't drain properly, so all the bad stuff just stays there. When the water evaporates, the chemicals get more concentrated. When the wind blows, it picks up these harmful substances and carries them towards the people who live nearby. Now, about 650,000 people have to breathe in this polluted air. It's making the air dirty, killing off animals and fish, and even messing up people's property. Fixing all these problems could cost up to $70 billion over the next 30 years. That's a lot of money to deal with the mess we made. Consumptive versus non-consumptive. In places like the Salton Sea, how water is used can be a big deal. Take farming, for example. When farmers flood their fields instead of using sprinklers, a lot of the water doesn't end up helping the crops directly. Instead, about half of it either evaporates or gets soaked up by the soil. While the evaporated water goes back into the sky and eventually becomes rain somewhere else, the soaked up water is essentially consumed by the plants. When farmers switch to more efficient sprinkler systems, they end up using less water overall. But instead of saving it for the environment, they usually just use the extra water to grow more crops. This means less water for rivers and wetlands, which can be a problem. Think about everyday things like flushing a toilet or running a faucet. That water gets treated and used again, so it's not really consumed. But watering your lawn? Yeah, that's pretty much a one-way trip. All that water either evaporates or gets soaked up by the grass, never to be seen again. When cities try to limit water use, people often switch to more efficient appliances. Sure, they save water inside the house, but then they might end up using more outside, like watering their lawns or washing their cars. And less water going down the drain can mess with sewage treatment plants, which are used to dealing with a lot more water. So, in the end, how we use water isn't just about turning on a tap or watering some plants. It's a bigger debate that affects our environment, our food, and our communities. Urban vegetation and water conservation. Maintaining trees might seem like a water-draining task compared to watering lawns. Think about it. It takes as much water to care for 1,600 feet of grass as it does to look after just one oak tree. Even though things like palm trees and orange trees in places like Southern California aren't naturally from there and need watering, getting rid of them would be a huge mistake. Why? Because all this greenery helps keep cities cooler by fighting the urban heat island effect. Plus, in a place like Las Vegas, plants play a big part in keeping dust down, wet water and paper water. The Colorado River carries two types of water, the kind you splash on your face and the kind lawyers argue about in court. Legal battles over water rights have become fierce as every drop is claimed before it even falls as snow. But now, the water levels in Lake Powell and Lake Mead are shrinking fast. If Lake Mead drops below 1,075 feet, the government will intervene to ration water. To avoid this, states like California and Nevada are already cutting back on their water use. They'd rather cooperate than face federal interference. The water they're using now is only possible because of massive government projects from the past. Despite this, many still distrust the government. Yet, the looming crisis may force them to stick together. A shortage declaration seems inevitable, and the stakes couldn't be higher. Tackle Western water issues. Possible solutions for the Western states' water issues include 1. Pipeline proposal. President Donald Trump suggests building a pipeline to move water from the wet Northwest to the dry Southwest. However, this plan is very expensive and would require fixing existing water infrastructure. Another idea is to divert water from the Great Lakes to the Missouri River, then send some to Kansas, and so on. But this needs cooperation among different groups with their own interests. 2. Desalination option. Desalination, which turns seawater into freshwater, is already happening in places like Florida and Dubai. It's costly because it involves filtering seawater and pushing it through a process called reverse osmosis. Even if desalination plants use clean energy, they could harm the environment by encouraging people to build in places where they shouldn't. 3. Cloud seeding. Cloud seeding is when planes release silver iodide into the air, which helps ice crystals form and leads to more rain. It's cost-effective and could help offset some of the effects of climate change by increasing rainfall. But we're not sure if using silver iodide everywhere might cause problems we haven't thought of yet. 4. Reducing irrigation. Cutting back on irrigation is tricky. People need food, and not watering fields can harm irrigation systems and hurt local economies. 5. Changing preferences. When restaurants and shoppers only want perfect-looking fruits and vegetables, farmers end up throwing away a lot of food and using more land to grow what's left. The impact of Minute Order 319. In 2012, the groundbreaking Minute 319 Water Agreement illustrated successful collaboration among parties with different water management interests. Led by former U.S. Assistant Secretary of the Interior, Bennett W. Raley, discussions started in 2004 involving stakeholders from U.S. basin states and Mexico. Through diverse meetings, including federal officials, water managers, and environmentalists, Minute 319 was formulated, benefiting the environment and garnering unanimous support. This exemplifies how cooperation among stakeholders with varied interests can lead to positive results. Key points. 1. The Colorado River supports agriculture, hydroelectric power, and recreation, impacting millions of lives and economies across several states. 2. Water laws differ across regions, with the West operating under prior appropriation, leading to complex water rights disputes. 3. Urbanization poses challenges to water conservation, with cities consuming significant portions of available water. 4. The environmental troubles of the Salton Sea highlight the consequences of human intervention in water systems. 5. Water usage methods, such as consumptive versus non-consumptive practices, impact ecosystems and water availability. 6. Collaborative efforts, like Minute 319, demonstrate successful water management solutions through stakeholder cooperation.